Well, hi everyone, welcome to Grace. I'm so glad that you've joined us today. You know, we've been in this series called Analog Life in a Digital World. And there may be a nagging question for some of you. Like, we've been encouraging you to be diligent about monitoring screen time and even reducing the number of hours per week that you're personally tied to technology. But if you look around our church and maybe even slightly observant, you might ask, well, doesn't the church seem to be using a lot of technology? Like, many of you are watching this worship service on a screen. We have screens all through our buildings. Our reading plans are on apps. We make extensive use of our video to share our stories and messages. And so you may be thinking, hey, Pastor, like, you seem to be telling us to curb our technology usage when the church itself seems to be using a lot of technology. All right, good question. Thanks for asking. I want to start today with a little history lesson before we arrive at our text. And so I want you to first look at the church's dubious history with technology. And really, skepticism about innovations or changes of any kind. And so in the 13th century, pews were added to the church experience for the very first time. So, which means for the first 1,200 years of church history, people stood up for the services. Nobody seems to be complaining about that one anymore. In the 14th century, the first organ was introduced. Again, highly controversial. This caused havoc in the church. That is the instrument that plays the devil's music. It was the ancient version of what electric guitars and drums were back in the worship wars of the 1980s. And similarly, many of the old hymns were highly controversial as well. You see, in the medieval world, most worship music was what you'd call high church. So think opera. The average person couldn't sing along with it. So hymn writers were trying to create songs that ordinary people could sing. And so they began to borrow the music of the secular culture around them, melodies that people sang in the pubs, or the tunes that bands would play in the street parades. And they set Christian lyrics to that music, and they began to sing those songs in church. And so to people's ears at the time, hymns sounded like bar tunes and not songs that were appropriate for worship. William Booth, the founder of the Salvation Army, was famous for writing these parodies, as they were called. It was he who famously said, "Why should the devil have all the best tunes?" And so to all those who think that the modern worship music is too secular and we need to go back to those holy hymns, the modern worship writers are doing the very same thing the hymn writers did back in their day, taking sacred lyrics and coupling them with modern music styles. I like one more quote from Booth that I think has broader implications for today's topic. "Oh, let us rescue this precious instrument from the clutches of the devil and make it, as it may be made, a bright and lively power for good." The instrument itself is neutral. It's what you do with it that matters. Keep that in mind. Pastor Stephen mentioned in week one that in the 16th century, the invention of the printing press was the latest and greatest technology. It changed the church forever. One concern of many Christians, though, was the kind of smut that could be produced and widely circulated on paper. And so the church resisted at first. But it was the printing press that allowed the Bible to get into the hands of the people. It is also what allowed Martin Luther's 95 Theses, which called out the church's corruption, to be widely distributed. Now, there are many, many more examples of the church initially resisting technology, but I want you to fast forward to the 19th and 20th century. The radio was invented. Some worried that the devil's music was now on the airwaves. Then TV came along, and there was an outcry. Think of all the horrible stuff that's going in right into people's living rooms. The most common Bible verse taken out of context was in Ephesians 2 that called Satan the prince of the power of the air. And so that must mean that Satan owns all the airwaves and radio and TV with it. But think about it. The great evangelist, George Whitefield, back in the 1700s, this was pre-amplification, he preached 18,000 sermons to 10 million people. He could speak to 30,000 people at a time by yelling. Just incredible. But what most people don't know is that Whitefield would conclude every sermon by spitting up and coughing blood for an hour. It was brutal on his vocal cords and shortened his ministry. Contrast that to Billy Graham, who made use of amplification when it came around and radio and TV. And he came under great scrutiny for doing so by the church, but he spoke to 210 million people compared to Whitefield's 10 million. Both incredible, but what was the difference? Well, technology multiplied one of those ministries. And I wonder what Whitfield could have done, or John Wesley, or Martin Luther, or the Apostle Paul, for that matter, could have accomplished with modern technology. Praise God, actually, that Billy Graham plugged in. One more example in our quick history lesson. In the early 20th century, the first motion picture camera was invented by Thomas Edison. I love the quote. He said, "I'm working on an invention that does for the eye what the phonograph does for the ear." So Edison, who was a believer in Jesus, he patented the first motion picture camera. And do you know what he did? He gave the patent to his church. And do you know what his church did? They gave it back because they opposed technology. And I bet they'd like to have that one back. But when the first movie theater opened, 7 of the first 10 movies ever made were about Jesus. Did you know the number one watched movie of all time around the world is Campus Crusade's Jesus of Nazareth? That church failed to see, as the church has often done, that most technology by itself is morally neutral. It's not good or evil, but it can be used for both. It's either a tool that can be redeemed for great good, or something that can be used for harm. More recently, in the 1900s, we had the launch of the, 1990, we had the launch of the World Wide Web, just a few decades ago. Think about the implications that this has made. I mean, I preach a message like this, and it's being shown in different cities, and on Facebook, and YouTube, and our online platform, and iTunes in the form of a podcast. Think about the multiplication of just one message. And what's my point with all this history? Why am I telling you all these things? Because yes, the church has always had a dubious relationship with technology. And we probably should be slow to weigh God's discernment in all things. But we also mustn't fall into the traps of our history where change was rejected just because it was change. We have to accept the good, reject the bad, and learn to follow Jesus well through it all. And so, all series, we've been saying that as individuals, we need to be very mindful of establishing clear boundaries with our screen time and media intake. We need to be very aware of the addictive nature of technology. But we also know that technology can be used for the sake of the gospel. Just like the printing press, just like the radio and amplification and TV and motion pictures. And so our church doesn't use the internet and social media and podcasts for the sake of being cool, but because the most common communication pipeline of our time between people and the church goes through technology. It's simply a delivery system that we're leveraging to tell the best news in the history of the world. And if Coca-Cola can use it to sell sugar water, how much more important that we use it to tell people about Jesus? And just like William Booth and those bar tunes, and just like Martin Luther and that printing press, and just like Billy Graham reclaiming the devil's TV airwaves, let's take the technology now available to us and use it to expand the kingdom of God. So our text today is in 1 Corinthians 9, 19 to 23. And as you're getting there in your Bible or device, the big idea that I want to challenge us with today is simply this. We can leverage technology for God's glory. Remember, Paul is the greatest missionary of all time. He left his home on 3 extended missionary journeys around the known world at the time, and he started new churches in the cities that he visited. He broke down cultural and racial and ethnic and gender barriers wherever he went. And one of the things that you need to understand in order to get the urgency of all this is the core belief that every Christian is a witness for Christ. You may not travel the world to start new churches, but you have a calling to share Christ with your neighbor, to share the love of Christ with your coworkers and your family members. And so one of the core callings of every church, a church like ours, is to reach more people with the good news that Jesus died for them. We talked last month about our core value called outward focus, that the people outside our walls are just as important as the people inside. And so in Paul's day, the religious leaders were very tied to tradition and to rules and to laws, and they wanted to be faithful to the truth. And Paul wanted to be faithful too, but he also wanted the message of Jesus to be flexible so that more people could be reached. So I want you to look how he describes this tension in 1 Corinthians 9, starting in verse 19. It says, "For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, though not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. And I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in all its blessings. So he's saying, all things to all people, by all means, that I might save some. And we see here the driving force of Paul's passion in verse 23. He says, it is for the sake of the gospel. I always want to remind you when this word gospel comes up that word just means good news. He's simply referring to the good news that Jesus came and died for our sins and rose again so that we might be adopted as children of God. So Paul says, because that message is so important, I'm going to go to great lengths to spread that word. And there are two words, I think, that summarize Paul's approach here in this regard. And they offer some guidance, I think, to us as well. He wants to be both faithful and flexible. Faithful and flexible. He still wants to be faithful in the process of sharing the gospel. Notice, there are limiting factors. He wouldn't cross over into sin. And so Paul doesn't say, you know, to the drunk, I became a drunk. To the child molester, I became a child molester. To reach more adulterers, I started cheating on my wife. To reach porn stars, I became a porn star. No, he wants to be faithful to the gospel in the process of spreading the gospel. But he also wants to be flexible. You see, at the same time, he's saying, listen, the gospel is not rigid. It needs to be translated into a variety of cultures, a variety of backgrounds and generations and religious persuasions. And so we need to be flexible with the gospel in order to reach people. I've heard it stated before that we'll do anything short of sin to reach people with the gospel. And so when Paul starts evangelizing in Jewish circles, he starts acting more like a Jew. He's not pretending, he's not faking, he's just adapting. And so he goes up to Jerusalem, and some of the authorities say to him, you know, it'd be really good if you took a vow connected with the temple. And so Paul did. He was prepared to flex. That's also what he did with Timothy. Paul says, I want Timothy to come with me on these missionary trips, but we're going into the heart of the Jewish world, and everybody in that world knows that Timothy was never circumcised, and it's going to hurt his credibility. And so Timothy gets circumcised as a grown adult so that he and Paul can share the gospel among the people that they're trying to reach. That's commitment right there. He didn't take his stand on the secondary issue and say, no, Christians shouldn't be circumcised. That's the old law and we don't follow that old law anymore. No, he says, you don't have to. You're free from it. But on the other hand, it's certainly not a sin to do it. And so for the sake of the gospel, we're going to become like the Jews. One of the charges against Paul in Galatia actually was that he went too far, that he was a man pleaser, that he was changing his message to fit the audience. Jesus was accused of this as well, all the time, eating with sinners, right? He's a compromiser. He's not being faithful. But Paul saw this as a function of flexibility, that we can be faithful to the gospel, but we should also be flexible in different cultural contexts. To the Jew, I became like a Jew. To the Muslim, I became like a Muslim. To the postmodern, I became like a postmodern. We must be equally committed to both faithfulness to the truth and flexibility in our presentation, which is why I've become so wary of Christians trying to tie their identities to secondary issues. Paul resisted this. But we are so quick to slap these banners on ourselves. I'm a anti-vaxxer. I'm a back the blue. I'm a Black Lives Matter. I'm a build a wall. I'm a keep your guns. I'm a double masker. I'm whatever the cause is. So many people tend to wear that cause up front, taking on that identity. And even though it's your right, listen, even though it's your right to do so, even though you're free to do so, Paul is saying here in verse 19, he said, I lay down my rights, I lay down my freedoms, I lay down my banners, and I make myself a servant to all people so that I might win some of them. See, the only identity that matters to Paul and to us is your identity as an ambassador of the Most High God. And the only scandal that should stand in someone's way of meeting him is the scandal of the cross. You don't need to put up any more barriers than that. Now, I want you to see one more phrase in our text before we talk about some of the implications. In verse 22, Paul's famous line, he says, I've become all things to all people. Now, sometimes people miss this next phrase. That by all means, I might win some. He says, whatever means I have at my disposal, I'm going to use those means to win people. I said earlier, the gospel is good news. It's news, which means it's something that needs to be communicated. So what means do we have to communicate? Well, one of the things that we always need to look at is what are those means available that will help us to get this news out, to speak the language of our culture. Where are people gathering? Where are people talking? Where are people debating and considering the issues of our time? That's where the church needs to be. Now, this has looked different in different eras. In the time of Paul, for example, I can't overstate this, how important one particular new innovation was to Paul's ministry. Do you know what that innovation was? They were called roads. During the rise of the Roman Empire, the Romans built a sort of highway system that connected all of their empire. You've heard the phrase probably, all roads lead to Rome. That's where this came from. These roads were mainly intended to transport military troops more easily to and from, but they also facilitated trade and communication from region to region, as couriers had much easier time spreading the word about any kind of important news. This innovation, these roads, coupled with the Pax Romana, which many of you remember from history class, it just means the peace of Rome, which was kind of this relative political and social stability that came during the Roman rule, and the fact that Koine Greek became the common language that was spoken, a universal language throughout the empire, all of these things had a major impact on the spread of Christianity. And so when our Bible says that Christ came in the fullness of time, I believe that it's no accident that it was this moment in history where Jesus was born in the cradle of this ancient world so that the name of Christ could spread to the ends of the earth through these new innovations. And Paul used these technologies and innovations, the roads, the common language, the couriers who delivered letters from church to church in the ancient world. You know, most of the letters in our New Testament are called circular letters. That is, they were delivered to one church and read for that church, and then they circulated from church to church throughout a whole region. It was actually very similar to our multi-site approach to teaching, only we use video and not letters. But we find ourselves in the heart of another kind of revolution. We live in the age of the internet. It's our version, I think, of Roman roads, the greatest communication tool of all time. So can the internet be used for harm? Yes, obviously, but it can be leveraged for the gospel too. As our big idea states, we can leverage technology for God's glory, as Paul said in this passage, so that by all available means, I might win some. The internet is an available means, and it's a neutral tool that can be used for great good. And remember, it's neutral, so it can also be used for great harm. So just like a hammer, you could take a hammer and you could use it to build a house for a needy family. Or you could take that same hammer and break into that house and steal all of that family's belongings. The hammer itself is neutral. It's dependent on the user. And as a church and as individuals, we must decide how we're going to use these tools, these screens, this internet, this social media. How will we leverage them for God's glory? And so let me share with you three ways that I believe that the church can leverage technology for God's glory. Here's the first. It's as a tool to connect people with God every day. Many of you know that we've been doing a lot of work in this area over the past few years. There's a phrase that we've adopted that says, we want to help you to move your faith from weekly church service to a daily walk with God, from weekly to daily. You have 168 hours each week to live your life, 168 hours to work with purpose, to love your friends, to honor your spouse, to be a great influence on your kids or your grandkids, to serve the community, 168 hours to work, sleep, eat, relate, and recuperate. Now, if I were to ask you how many of those hours are God's, the ideal answer would be all of them, all 168, that we live every day, every hour as unto the Lord. But many of us struggle to do that, don't we? And part of the problem is that many of you are relying on 1 hour with God on Sunday to carry you through the other 167. And for most, you're not even here every Sunday because of other stuff. And so now it's 1 hour trying to sustain 336 hours of life, 2 weeks, or 504 hours if you go for 3 weeks. Your faith can't be sustained by 1 hour per week. It needs to be walked out every day. It's like the story of the woodcutter. who got a job from a timber merchant, and his boss gave him an axe and he told him to get to work. And the first day, the woodcutter cut down 18 trees, and his boss was extremely impressed. He said, "Well done, keep it up. You're our best woodcutter yet." More motivated than ever, the woodcutter tried even harder the next day, but he only cut down 15 trees. The third day, he tried even harder, but he only cut down 10 trees. And day after day, he cut down fewer and fewer trees. And eventually, he was fired. And he couldn't figure out why he lost his strength along the way. And so he went and he handed his axe back into his boss. And his boss took one look at the axe and he said, "You worked harder and harder with less results because you failed to spend time every day sharpening your axe. And some of you are working feverishly to try to live your life with a dull spiritual axe. An hour a week isn't enough. You have to move your faith from weekly to daily." And so we're committed to continuing to provide daily resources, like the journal that we're distributing with this series, and the website over at whoisgrace.com/read, which is just loaded with resources, and our Who Is Grace app to give you a daily roadmap for your faith. As you've surely heard, we've really recently partnered with YouVersion Bible app to provide resources there as well that can personally reach literally millions of people all over the world. I also think of the worship playlists that we provide on Spotify so that you can search for Who Is Grace over there and use those playlists and our podcasts that are meant to encourage your walk throughout the week at different times of the year. We just know that technology can be leveraged as a tool to connect people with God every day. The second way that we can leverage technology is as a tool to network people with one another. Pastor Stephen's going to talk more about this next week, but let me just share one small piece of vision. You know, Jesus has always worked through existing social networks to share his love and hope to the world. Even when Jesus was choosing his first disciples, he worked through existing social networks. And so he went first to Andrew, and he invited Andrew to follow, and Andrew went to Simon and said, "We found the Messiah, come see him." Jesus went to Philip, and then Philip recruited Nathanael to be a disciple. Jesus turned individual encounters into opportunities to touch whole social networks. He met a woman at the well who brought the whole town to see Jesus. He healed a demon-possessed man who gathered a crowd of 4,000 the next time Jesus was in the area. He would use dinner parties with Matthew to meet other tax collector friends. You see, relationships and social networks have always been the most important human factor in the spread of the gospel. Many of you have heard the phrase 6 degrees of separation, or Kevin Bacon, wherever that came along, but it's based on a real scientific study in 1967 by Harvard professor Stanley Milgram, who asked his students to help him find out how many acquaintances it takes to connect two randomly selected people in different parts of the world. Now, I won't take the time to explain the whole experiment. If you're interested, that's why God made Google. But the conclusion of the experiment was that the most common number of intermediate people between two random people anywhere in the world was 5.5, less than 6 degrees of separation from any other person. In other words, despite the complexity of our world, we are all just a few handshakes away from everyone else. It's a small world. And if that was true in 1967, how much more true is it right now with the internet, with social media? The world has never been more connected. And so technology provides a tool that connects people with God every day and a tool to connect us with each other. But the third way that I believe that the church can leverage technology is as a tool to reach more people with the gospel. You know, from the beginning, Jesus' vision was that the church would be a global movement. He said, "Go into all the world and make disciples." And that has never been more possible to reach the world than it is right this moment. I said earlier that one of our values is being outward focused. And this is hard because the gravitational pull of every single church is inward. It's tempting for churches to get a great facility and sit around and pay it off and get fat and happy and ride off into the sweet by and by. But the church is a hospital for sinners and not a country club for the saints. And so our church must continually operate with a missionary mindset and make missionary decisions. Let me explain. If you were gonna be a missionary going into a village in another country to start a new church, you would look at the tools at your disposal. You would say, "Here's my Bible, here's the gospel, Now, what is the music of this culture? How do people communicate in this culture? What is the language that they speak in this culture? How do I take this gospel, this good news, and put it through the filters of this culture so that it makes sense to them, so that I can reach this group of people? How can I be both faithful and flexible, as Paul taught us? It's why at Grace we try to stay current in this culture that we're in, with music and with technology and with social media. These are missionary decisions intended to reach a culture. I remember standing before a group of people in this church a couple decades ago when we were going through our version of church worship wars, and we were deciding what style of music can we play in the church. And I asked that group, who were mostly over 65 years old at the time, how many of you, I said, would give up your lives for your grandchildren? Like, if it came to reaching your grandchildren with the love of Christ, how many would give up your life? And every hand was raised high and proud. And then I asked, how many of you would give up your music preference for 20 minutes on a Sunday if that would help to reach them? And everyone got the point. These are missionary decisions, laying aside my rights and freedoms and my preferences and being willing to become all things to all people so that I might win some of them. Do you know what the main place conversations are happening these days? The main place people are networking, the main place people are buying and selling, the main place where people are dating, where they're having life and death conversations, that place is online. And that's where the church needs to be. It's a missionary decision to go where the people are. And while I'm really happy with what we've been able to do online since the pandemic began, and while I'm really proud of our efforts, I'm not totally satisfied either. We're producing some great content that's reaching lots of people through essentially what I would call a 60-minute broadcast, which is, again, a great front door, but it's not an actual substitute for a church experience. Church was never meant to be something that was watched. In addition, with our service on Facebook and YouTube and television and whoisgrace.com, we are currently not able to know who's watching, know who's attending. We can't follow up with them. We can't offer next steps. We can't extend care. And in this way, it really isn't a congregation. It's an audience. And again, we plan to continue those things as a great front door for many. But in addition, our plan is to create and launch a brand new online experience sometime in early 2022 and build an actual online congregation. This new platform is going to allow for maximum participation and engagement. We'll be tailoring the worship experience for that particular platform with shorter and more personalized worship elements, sermon elements, as well as a live host that will walk through the experience. I'll show you a short little preview of what's to come in by way of some screenshots. So people will be able to come in and log in. That's critical, because we'll know who's there, and they'll be able to get a little tour around the site, and you can see the screen there in the middle, and you can also see some rows of seats below the screen. So next, you can sit in a seat, and your video chat from your computer will pop up on the side if you so choose. And if you want to sit with some friends, they can sit in the row with you, and up to four people will be on that side screen watching and interacting together. You can see Danielle and Sarah there occupying the two seats, but also seeing each other there on the left sidebar. We'll also be able to prompt action with a pop-up screen to encourage engagement or participation in some way. And after the service, this is really cool, we can prompt people to come into a different room, to split off into rooms where we may offer a core class in one room, or where they can meet the pastor in another room, or where they could join the opening meetup of a 7-day online challenge group in another room. And eventually, similar experiences to this can be hosted live in a microsite congregation in someone's living room or another local neighborhood building or a storefront, as we begin to see pockets of people watching from the same region or the same city. And in that way, we would have mini versions of Grace Harbor Creek or mini versions of our Commons congregation in various cities around the country. So we're pretty excited about the possibilities, and we'll be launching an entire strategy around building this online congregation sometime in early 2022. And if you'd like to get in on the ground floor of this, be a part of our launch team, we need all kinds of different people. You don't have to be a tech nerd, although we would love tech nerds. But you can contact Danielle Hartland at danielle@whoisgrace.com. She's putting together our Grace Online dream team. Now, all this to say, we don't believe technology's evil. It has amazing potential to be used and leveraged to connect people with God every day, to network people with one another, and to reach more people with the gospel. And as we leverage it, we want to follow Paul's guardrails and be both faithful and flexible. And I remind you today that the mission of the church is not to make sure that things are going okay inside our building while the rest of the world goes to hell. The mission of Christ Church is to locate as many people who haven't yet tasted the love and grace and relationship that flows from the living God and provide them with a compelling opportunity to respond to his love. And especially in this season of COVID, still plaguing our world, there are people who never knew that they needed Jesus. They never knew that they needed a local church until right this moment. And so we want to take the church to them by any means available to us. May God be with us as we leverage technology for his glory. Now, as a personal next step, I would encourage you to continue to practice the mealtime challenge. But would you also consider one way from the message today that you can leverage technology for good? Ask God to help you pick one of these things to work on. Could you leverage technology to connect with God every day, to network with others, or to reach someone with the gospel? I love you guys. Have a great week.